This is a recording for Andrew LaPlante with the Florida Atlantic University Board of Trustees on December 17, 2013 at 3 p.m. Central Time.
Good afternoon. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Andrew, would you call the roll, please?
Trustee Barber?
Here.
Trustee Workman?
Here.
Trustee Amorato? Trustee Kane? Trustee Fader?
Here.
Trustee Feingold? Trustee McDonald?
Here.
Trustee Mulberry?
Here.
Trustee Nyan? Trustee Rubin?
Here.
Trustee Stille? Trustee Tanner?
Here.
Trustee Teske?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Okay, thank you. Thank you all for doing this. We have to approve the 2012-2013 State University System Accountability Report. So I'm going to turn it over to Provost Perry.
Yeah, let me also, this is Dennis Crudell. Just let me also say that this is a requirement of the Board of Governors that the Board of Trustees approve the annual report, and this is something important that they haven't given us much time on throughout the several years we've been doing this report, and also several other universities also are meeting this week to approve their accountability report. So I just wanted to let you know that prior to Provost Perry talking about the report, and I have talked to the staff, and I am going to mention this to Chancellor Prizer as we go forward, because they need to give us more time to do something.
David, can you put your phone on mute, please?
Okay, hold on.
So we have been working on this diligently with the Board of Governors staff over the last several months. So, and we had some of the preliminary data that was done back in June that we did discuss with you at that time. So I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Perry.
Okay, good afternoon, trustees. Again, let me thank you for having this meeting today. As the President said, we do have to have this accountability report approved by our Board of Trustees, and we have to have this back to the Board of Governors staff by December 18th. So just tomorrow, if we get your approval today, then we will send this up to the staff. It won't actually be reviewed and approved by the Board of Governors until the January meeting of the Board of Governors, but we have to have it back to the Board of Governors staff by the 18th. And again, I apologize for some of the to-ing and fro-ing that we've had on this accountability report, and I'll just explain some of that now, because this is the first time I've been through this, and it's really opened my eyes and raised a number of issues for us, and I'll address some of those in just a moment. These are good issues, by the way. I think it's made us really sit and think about how we collect and enter our data. The report, when we develop this data, is developed by our Institutional Effectiveness and Analysis Group, and then we have to send it up to the Board of Governors staff. They review the data, look at the data, send it back to us for comment, see where there's discrepancies in what they have in their records. We make adjustments or we argue with them. We send the data back up to the Board of Governors staff. They look at it, look at our objections, look at our changes, send it back down to us. And so all the time, this, you know, each step we have to wait, and it takes time before we can bring it to you, but we absolutely have to have the trustees approve this before we can send it in. And one of the issues that has arisen as a result of this process, and that is why you have been provided with additional section table 4J, was for the 2012-13 baccalaureate degrees without excess credit hours, we have been trying to understand how we as an institution generate those numbers. And it's very important, as you've heard me in the past at various meetings, that our numbers are absolutely accurate and reflective of of how the numbers should look, because baccalaureate degrees without excess credit hours is indeed one of the ninth performance metrics, and it is the ninth metric that was chosen for us, not by us, but chosen for us by the Board of Governors. So it's very important that we know that these numbers in that column are accurate. And we've uncovered, actually, in the Registrar's Office, really some data entry problems, and I will leave it at that. And we are reviewing the Registrar's Office at the request of the Registrar, I might add, Wendy Kuchner, on the practices and how numbers are entered into our databases, how such numbers are transferred from the colleges to the central database. And it has highlighted some problems, and we're going to look into that. Now, that's not to say these numbers are wrong. They're not. They're absolutely accurate. And Jason Ball, our Chief Information Officer, and his group have spent countless hours over the last several weeks really looking at this data entry. And I'm very confident now that the numbers we have in place are indeed the correct numbers. So what I would like to do is just very, very briefly, I know some of you are actually on the road listening in, just to look through the dashboard indicators rather than go into the bulk of the report. I'm hoping that you've had a chance to look at that and get into the weeds of the numbers. But really, there's some very promising data that is coming out of this accountability report. For instance, you can see that in 2012 to 13, compared to 2008-2009, we've awarded about 15% more bachelor's degrees than we did back in 2008-09. So we are awarding more degrees. We've awarded in the same period, 2012-13 compared to 2008-09, 25% more graduate degrees. Okay, we've also awarded more baccalaureate degrees in the STEM areas, and again, this will be one of the 10 metrics that will be measured on by the Board of Governors as we go forward with performance funding, if indeed it's the 10 metrics that we're ultimately being measured for our institution. As you know, that's still not yet been finalized by the legislature, but probably will be in the coming legislative session, that the 10 metrics that we've talked about in the last couple of meetings will indeed become the metrics. Again, you know, if we look at our graduation rates, yes, we're still at about the 40% level for the six-year graduation rate, which has, you know, remained fairly constant at around the 40% for the last several years. And as you know, and as I've explained to you in past meetings, this is now an area which we as a university are going to address. This past semester, as interim provost, we have been working with the faculty, working with the faculty senate, hiring people in the provost's office, as well as working with the Division of Student Affairs, Charles Brown's division, to now begin to develop strategies of how we address our retention and graduation rate. And we're now in poised position to move forward with that. We have formed a steering committee of representatives from those three pillars, as I'm now calling this approach, you know, Student Affairs, Provost's Office, and the faculty through the Faculty Senate. And we are in the process of now identifying a task force, a university-wide task force, to begin to address the issue of student success in general. And that, to me, is not just about retention and graduation. It truly is about recruiting the best students at the beginning, all the way through mentoring those students both academically and in their personal and professional development as students here, so that we can graduate them with a degree and that they will have a job and will be good citizens in the state of Florida and the nation. Again, graduating students with a degree, but also those who get a job or go on to graduate education, is another performance metric. It was one of the performance metrics last year, and it is one of the performance metrics as we go forward. So this is an important metric, but also it speaks to how we are going to address student success. We're going to not just look at necessarily just retention, just graduation, but the whole picture. From the day the students move in or come into the university through to graduating with a job in the state of Florida. And we did quite well in that metric, believe it or not, in the last go-round. As we've been looking at this number of baccalaureate degrees that are awarded without excess credit hours, so what does that really mean? A baccalaureate degree is 120 credit hours. We're allowed 10% above that. So if we graduate students within 132 graduate credit hours, that's a good mark for us. If they're in excess of 132 hours, it will count against us. Okay? And again, this is something that we will pay a lot of attention to in the coming year. We look at our FTICs, about 44% of them are graduating without excess hours. We need to improve that number to increase the number of students that are graduating less than 132 hours. And the task force and the folks that we're putting on this are beginning to develop and will develop strategies to address this very issue. If we look, as I said already, at baccalaureate degrees awarded in areas of strategic emphasis, STEM would be a good example there. Compared to 2008, where we awarded 800 degrees this last year, it was 1,100 degrees. So we're looking at a considerable percentage increase in the number of STEM degrees that we're awarding. As you know, this is a national conversation to produce more STEM degrees. It's certainly a huge part of the state conversation and is indeed one of the metrics that we're looking at. So we're doing quite well there. Other areas of strategic emphasis, security, global issues, critical health areas, we're also seeing an increase in the number of STEM, the number of baccalaureate degrees that we are producing. The one area we pull back a little bit is in education. In critical areas of education, the STEM teachers, part of the issue there is a national issue that we are not producing enough STEM teachers in our programs in order to ensure that our K-12 system is doing the right job in STEM education. And that is something we will start to address also with the College of Education. It certainly doesn't help that situation when the state pulls back on its funding of teachers. You know, there was a time when our teachers could go on and get a master's degree, which we had programs in place to do that. And they got an additional amount of money in their base salary, and the state has pulled back on that. So we're beginning to see some issues with our graduate programs in the College of Ed because the teachers, it's not worth their while now to come back to school to get that master's degree. And we're going to try to address those in another way. But critical, absolutely critical that we address the issue of STEM education. Again, in the graduate degrees in these areas of strategic emphasis, we've seen, fairly significant increases since 2008. If we look, moving on to the accountability looks at our research product. That we have at the university. If you look at the overall number and the amount of money that we are seeing coming into the university, then it has been increasing for the last several years, okay? But for those of you who can see the graph, that number is made up of both in-state and FAU-funded research as well as, our externally funded research. And unfortunately, it's in our externally funded research where we're seeing a decrease in the amount of money that the university is bringing in. The importance of the external funded research is it carries a full overhead rate with it, currently about 45%, whereas most of our state grants or grants that come out of our Department of Education only carry about a 5% service fee. So whilst there is an overhead, the actual cost of administering the grant from, let's say, a state of Florida grant, a 5% administrative fee, this does not really cover the true cost of administering that research program.
That is usually borne out, of course, by the federal overhead rate, the indirect cost rate, which is about 45%. So that is something we are going to address in the next year as well. You'll remember our strategic plan calls for a doubling of research in the next 5 years. I tend to think that is a real stretch goal for us right now. You know, Vice President Rossen had established about a 15% increase per year over the next 5 years in order to double our research. And when I took on this position as interim provost, I discussed with President Crudell that in my mind, you know, was it an imperative right now that we double our research? I don't think it is. I think the imperative is that we increase our student success. As you've heard me say, I don't want to belabor the point, but a top-notch research university, Research One University, has to have just a very, very successful undergraduate program. It's the undergraduate program that funds everything else. Okay, the undergraduate program underwrites everything else we do in the university. That includes our research program. That money provides the time, the release time for faculty to do research, so they don't have to teach a course necessarily, or their teaching load is not as high as it would be if we weren't doing research. So it's absolutely critical that we have a successful undergraduate program. And if you look at any Research One or very high research activity university, they have outstanding undergraduate programs, and that's what where we will go to. Again, just continuing on with research, our licensing revenue peaked at about in 2009 and 10, has been decreasing since. Part of that is, of course, and much of these decreases in external funding and maybe licensing is also tied to the fact, remember, over the last 7 years, we've gone through some pretty severe budget cuts, and part of those budget cuts were absorbed in academic affairs by the colleges by basically not hiring faculty. All right, we have lost a lot of faculty over the last 7 years. We have lost a lot of research productive faculty who have been recruited away from the university, and we need to address that issue. And as you know, this year we are indeed we have authorized hiring about 80 new faculty lines in the university. So the university is going through a period of hiring of faculty, and certainly the mandate from me to the colleges is we're hiring research active faculty who can bring these numbers back up. But as you know, that will take a little bit of time. The other important part of hiring research faculty is also for the QEP. We need to provide research active faculty for our QEP, which, as you know, received rave reviews back in February from the on-site SACS team that visited us. And I can assure you, when Donna Chamley-Weig and Jenny Peluso presented our QEP in Atlanta last week, they were invited to the SACS conference to present our QEP. They came away with absolutely rave reviews. Everybody in the state wants to get a copy of our QEP. And I think Donna Chamley-Weig has got a good consultancy career ahead of her should she choose to take that route, and I'm trying to stop her from doing that. But anyway, you know, we got fabulous reviews from the QEP, but we've got to have research faculty here if we're going to have a major undergraduate research emphasis at the university, and so we've committed to hire the faculty, because in 5 years, when we come up for our 5-year SACS midterm review, it's never too early to start thinking about these things. We need the faculty in place, and we need to have shown that we have an increase in the number of students that are participating in our QEP, and that's what we'll do. I would sort of just look at the last graph that we're looking at here, and that's the appropriated funding per actual FTE, and as you can see, and as we all know, the state component of that has been steadily decreasing over the last several years. In 2008-2009, the total cost of an FTE, 70% provided by the state. Now it's 47%. and we've been making up somewhat of the difference there with our increase in tuition. But of course, as we all know, what we're essentially doing is offloading the cost of an education onto the backs of the students. That's life. We're still one of the cheapest states in the nation, but nonetheless, we are doing exactly that. We are offloading the cost of education much more onto our students, and it would be terrific if we didn't have to do that, but we do. So that's a little bit of an eye-opener. We've gone down now from an appropriated amount of just under 13,000 to about 9,500. So we have seen a large decrease in the amount of appropriate funding that we receive to train our students. And despite that, we're still doing a first-class job. So I think that is essentially the summary, the dashboard of the hard data that's in the rest of the report. I will just say, because I know one of you would have picked it up, and that is the report that we sent you out. There is one incorrect table, unfortunately, on page 16. When we were looking at the financial resources, the University Education General Reserves, some of the numbers got transposed. Whilst the total numbers are actually true, the individual numbers we need to correct, and I apologize for that. I don't know whether, Dorothy, you want to make any comment on that. Yes. There's a huge amount of numbers in here, so it's easy for some errors to be made.
Yeah, the errors actually in this report on that particular page actually stem from the Board of Governors, because they're the ones that fill in these particular cells. So when they gave us the report back, it had incorrect cell data. So that will be corrected if it goes to the full board in January. So that's not going to be an error going forward.
So in summary, as I said, this is the first time I participated in this, and the accountability report, I think, really shows the numbers and statistics for the university, and I think a lot of it looks very good, and a lot of it we're going to work on to improve, and we're doing that, started that process, I look forward to your approval of this report so I can send it up to Tallahassee.
Does anybody have any questions for Dr. Perry?
Yes. Dr. Perry, this is Trustee Feingold.
Yes.
Yeah, listen, I've heard this about the 40% graduation rate for 4 years now. And with task force and faculty senate approvals and presidential approvals, we're in the same place as we were 4 years ago. It was in the newspapers the other day that showed that we're at 40%. And I don't see any benchmarks to improve that. So I think that we need to have a real benchmark. Not just say, oh, we're going to improve that, and we have all these task force and committees. But I think that every division in the university should see where, in the College of Arts and Letters, whatever divisions they are, to see where they are, where they should be, and that you and the president should set parameters and goals in each of those divisions to raise that level. And I've never seen that. I've never seen in each of these divisions, okay, we'll graduate 30%, we're not even at 40%, let's get a 50 or 60, but I've never seen any energy, I've never seen a dean of any of those colleges come before us and make a presentation of what they are doing to achieve these goals. I have not heard anybody from the faculty say what they're planning on doing. All I hear is the same rhetoric every year concerning the graduation rate. So I would like, before the next meeting in January, for you and your staff to prepare for the board of trustees goals from each of the divisions of the school, where they are currently, and what you think is attainable in the next year. Because we're hiring a new president, and I would want to have a game plan for the new president to see what we have come up with in terms of our measurements. And I don't want to read in the Sentinel and Palm Beach Post Times that we're still at 40% after 6 years.
Trustee Feingold,
other than that,
those are all very good points, and I would say what you've proposed is exactly what we are doing right now. Beg your pardon, I've only been in the job 3 months or 4 months or however long it is, but these are exactly the sort of questions
that I'm asking of the task force to come forward. And this group that is made up as a three-legged stool or three pillars of the provost's office and undergraduate studies, division of student affairs, and the faculty itself, these are the very questions that we are that task force is asking and is tasking the colleges with collecting the data. At this point, we are collecting the data, and we will be coming forward within the short order for strategies to deal with this. Now, I had proposed to Trustee Tanner that early in the new year we will have a workshop for CASA, for the Committee on Academic and Student Affairs, and that workshop will begin to address some of those very issues that you raised. Setting some goals for the colleges so that we can begin to move this 40% number off of that line. Now, as you know, and you know I've said at past Board of Trustees meetings, we need to put strategies in place now, because it will take a year, 2 years, or 3 years for us to truly see a change in those numbers. That's just a fact of life. We will not be able to change these numbers overnight, but we will be putting in place strategies to change that number.
The other issue was that we needed to profile the incoming freshmen from high school to high school to see which of the high schools are the students that we're accepting are not getting up to speed, and therefore address that issue as well, because that was brought up by me about 3 or 4 years ago, that the failure rate in first year is about 25%. And I said, if we're taking students from certain high schools that are not measuring up to our criteria, which is constantly going higher, then we need to address that as well in the admissions process, so we select our students, the diverse student body, of course, but to the students in high schools that are preparing the students properly so that they can graduate. And the other issue was that since our board passed and voted on, thank God, that everybody who graduates school continues with their email addresses. So it's a very easy thing for us to track our students through their own graduation, where they are a year or two or three after graduation in terms of job opportunities and where they are now. And to me, we need to further that effort so that we can show our alumni and show the university community, plus the Board of Governors in Tallahassee, that we are doing our job to prepare our students for not just graduating with a job, but long-term success. But I really appreciate your efforts, Dean Perry. Dr. Perry, you've really done it in the last few months. I've seen a huge move in the right direction, and I really have my full confidence going forward, and I just want to wish everybody a happy and healthy new year. I got to cut out from the phone right now, but I just want to wish everybody the best.
Thank you.
Happy new year, and congratulations to the new football coach. Thank you.
Are there any other discussion on the, or does anybody have any other questions for Dr. Perry? Hearing none, can I have a motion to accept the report as presented?
So move.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion on the motion?
No, just to let you know, Anthony, that Dan Kane has been here. I missed roll call, but was here for Dr. Perry's presentation.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, and Anthony, Bob Stilley was here also.
Right, thank you, Bob. Okay, hearing none. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, the motion carries. Thank you very much. Two quick things. One is on the presidential search. We're continuing to move towards our next meeting will be January 6th. We have gotten encouraging from our search firm that we should have a good pool of candidates. I think you all got the email address or the information on how to access the secure website. And if you didn't, speak to Andrew and we'll make sure you get that information. You can look at the applications are uploaded every Friday. please don't make any judgments on the applications as they go along. Wait until the end when we see what the entire pool is going to be like. So we are moving along very well. One of the things that I have asked, in light of that, I've asked our general counsel to forward to Parker, at their request, a copy of a potential contract that we could use. It doesn't have any numbers or anything in it. It's just a draft contract. And we have actually David has developed two drafts. One, if the president, the incoming president, would choose to live in the Baldwin House. The other, as many of the other presidents have done in the other universities, if they choose to live off campus, then we would have a housing allowance that we would negotiate at that time. So Parker has the two contracts. And I just wanted to give you that update. The other thing is, obviously, we announced today that we've hired a new football coach. Our president and our AD handled this search well. And he will be for a short time, he will be at our dinner tonight, so you'll get a chance to meet Coach Parker. Anything else I need to cover? Okay. Does anybody have anything else they'd like to add? If not,
Anthony, yes, I have a quick question. What's the rationale for offering a housing allowance if we already have a beautiful house?
If you look at, we're the only university. I think we're the only university in the system where the president lives in the house on campus. Everywhere else, so we're going to give an option.
But I mean, if not for nothing, I'd rather give them money to a scholarship than give it to the president. We have a beautiful house for them to live in.
Okay, I understand that.
And that's just my feeling. I mean, I'm not trying to be difficult. I'm just thinking, we have this beautiful million-dollar house sitting there. It's on our campus. You know, spend a lot of money on it. We spend a lot of money on upkeep. And, you know, that we're going to offer them to give them whatever that housing allowance is. It's not going to be an inconsequential amount of money. I'm not comfortable with that. I mean, unless there's a real rationale for that, why should we offer that?
Well, it's part of it is recruiting. We do want to get the right candidate, and that has been an issue for some people, I think. And so we're providing. I'm not saying.
Well, all right. I mean, let's put it this way. Okay. If it was me negotiating that, I sure as hell wouldn't offer that up front. I wouldn't bring it up. I'd let them bring it up and make that part of the negotiations. I mean, to offer it up front to me I realize you're just doing it as an option, but that's in essence offering it.
Trustee Rubin.
Yes.
We are recruiting. We are sharing.
I understand.
We're sharing things with our recruiter. I'm not talking to any candidate I wouldn't talk to anybody about things like this until after the person is selected president. So they have asked us, they have told us that is something that will help us in recruiting. As I have looked at every other university in the system, which all have very beautiful homes on campuses, none of the presidents live in those homes. The homes don't get shut down. They get used, and ours will be used. And I would not be surprised if Canada chose to live here.
Anthony?
Yes.
This is Abdul. I'm not very familiar with it, but isn't there just a small apartment within the house that the president lives in?
Yeah, it's probably, upstairs is divided into two sides. It's probably 12 or 1,300 square foot apartments. with...
So my thinking is if the president has a family, he might want to be able to spread out. So we don't want to...
If the president, Abdul, has a family, that house would be very difficult to work for them.
It's not big enough, yeah.
Yeah, so we should be aware of that. Cause
so, if they don't...
All I'm saying, Trustee Barber, all I'm saying is whatever you tell the recruiter, they're just going to use that as a sales tool. That's all I'm saying. I'm not taking issue with the fact whether we should or we shouldn't do it. All I'm saying is we just have to be careful. We have a limited amount of dollars. That's it.
I totally agree with you. Anything else? Okay, can I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
So moved.
Okay, moved and seconded. All in favor, say
aye.
Okay, meeting adjourned. We'll see you all in about an hour and a half.
Great, thanks.
Thank you.
Bye,
James. Thank you.